S-R-N.
God damn it! What in God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Welcome to episode 17 of Cinema Crespo Diso. It is me, Christopher Crespo, the one and only. I am here with number two man, Drewster Cogburn. Drew, how's it going, buddy?
Doing okay, Chris. How about yourself?
Doing good, dude. Doing good. Just chilling, listening to some Prima Movers. Not a really sexy band.
But
the song
awesome
is so
song.
Good. Manhunter soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
And then recently Netflix put that thing up for like 3 weeks and then they yanked it off.
Netflix just recently yanked like 1,700 titles.
Yes, they did, and we'll be talking about that later, sir. Yes, we will in the old Crespo Dome. We got a lot to talk about in episode 17. It's just you and me. We've had a lot of guests coming in here lately.
Recently, coming into
the studio, yeah. I felt like we needed a little break. We're going to take it easy this week. Hope you don't mind.
Awesome. Sounds great. I need a break. I've been working a lot.
Yeah, I've been working a lot. You've always been jet-setting around the world with all your humanitarian efforts. And, you know, there was that thing where you saved that pygmy village in South America from the army of fire ants.
Yes, that
was pretty impressive,
those
dude.
Those fire ants were huge.
I'm allowed to talk about that, right? I know the government, government sent you there.
It's cool. It's not classified.
Since I worked out for the best.
It's not classified.
Immediately unclassified information. Yeah, it's cool. I'm glad that you can, take out some time to record the show with us. Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to do this off the top of the bat. I wanted to talk to you people at home about how you can support the show and support Cinema Crespo Diso. It's really easy. iTunes, go there, subscribe to the show, search for Cinema Crespo Diso in the iTunes store. Rate us 5 stars, leave a review, right, Drew?
Of course. That's the best way to do it.
That'll get us more exposure, that'll get more people to listen to the show, hence more people that don't understand it, and then they'll leave bad reviews.
Well, exactly. I mean,
it'll all balance out in the end.
It's all about iTunes.
That's why we need the 5-star reviews now. So we just want to put that out there. Also go to chriscrespo.com. A lot of really cool stuff there. But we got a packed show, so we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about the box office review. Got a big new movie coming out this weekend that we got to talk about. We're going to review. New movies coming out. Crespo Disco, the Crespo Dome, but first, the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Here we go. Drew's got the Crespo Diso Randomizer 9000. He shook it up. He's looking inside. And he comes across. Oh, he's going to check for verification first. Now we're going for verification. This is like the Domino's Pizza Tracker. Drew is now verifying Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. For also the aforementioned purge of 1,700 titles.
Exactly. Got to make sure they're there.
But did we get it on the first try, Drew?
Yes, we did. Wet Hot American Summer.
Woo! Wet Hot American Summer.
It's a good one. One of my favorite comedies.
That is a good one. Let me write that one down to make sure. Because I, for every Netflix pick of the week, I put a little article put up on the ChrisCrespo.com. You know, make sure everyone can get the link to it and see what the movie is exactly. Wet Hot American Summer is David Wayne, guy, one of the guys behind The State and Stella. What else? Viva Variety.
Yeah.
What's the what was one of the more anyway? All those things. Michael Ian Black, Michael Showalter. You know, the three guys together. They do their thing. The comedy troupe. This is one of their movies where they made a comedy about a bunch of like teenagers. You know, like a summer camp comedy. It's the last day at summer camp.
Exactly.
And some people are trying to get laid, and some kids are feeling nerdy, and you know, whatever. But it's all filmed with a bunch of 30-year-olds pretending to be teenagers. Like, that's one of the main jokes. It's
exactly.
It's a very absurd, very over-the-top comedy of a movie. They're talking about doing a sequel. They've been talking about doing a sequel for a while.
Well,
actually,
a lot of the people who weren't that popular when they were in this movie have become quite popular these days.
Yeah, much more popular now. Paul Rudd, Elizabeth Banks.
Well, no, exactly. Christopher Maloney. He has sex with a refrigerator in this movie.
And now he's on Law & Order SVU investigating people who have sex with appliances.
Exactly.
And other horrible
sexual
deviants. Actually, it's not a sequel that they're working on. They want to do a prequel.
Okay.
But with the characters playing the same people. The actors
really?
Playing the same people.
So 10 years later, they're playing themselves 10 years younger?
It's going to be a bunch of 40-year-olds playing themselves as younger teenagers, yeah.
That's kind of funny, actually.
Pretty,
it sounds kind of ridiculous.
Pretty meta, pretty ridiculous.
I dig it.
So, yeah, that's a fun movie. It's definitely very, you know, absurd and over the top, and it has little nuanced, smart comedy, like right next to dick jokes and fart jokes you know, really, really broad stuff. So I think everyone will really enjoy it. So, hey, good pick there, Drew, with the old Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. So
Thank
there you,
you
go. You can check out all my other Instant Pick of the Weeks at ChrisCrespo.com. Got almost a year and a half's worth of picks up there. It's ridiculous. All right, so let's get into the weekend box office review. Drew, you got them right there?
Yeah.
All right, let's start
yeah,
with
I do.
Let's start with number 5.
All right, number 5 this week we have The Croods. They had a weekend gross of $4.2 million for total gross of $168 on a budget of $135.
And also on top of that $168, it made $349 million internationally.
Yeah, so it made like $500 million.
$517 million worldwide.
Yeah, like I said, $500 million. I think Fox found its new animated
cash cow.
Yeah, they're gonna crank those things out until they stop making money, and then they're just gonna go straight to DVD.
Then they'll do the Croods, little spin-offs and sidequels, and yeah, that is correct. Nothing more to say about that one. Let's move on.
And number 4 this week we have Oblivion, that had a weekend gross of $5.7 million, total gross is $75.9 million on a budget of $120 million. Really, Tom, the new Tom Cruise flick is only making $80 million,
only in America. But it made $146 million in international markets, so it's at $222 million worldwide.
Well, good for them. I mean, I guess maybe the Europeans would maybe like this movie a little bit
more. Europeans. I mean, the big markets are, Mexico is a pretty big market. China is now like the second biggest market, soon become the biggest film market in the world.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these countries, you can squeeze 5, 10, 15 million out of all these countries in the long run. They makes all its money back in international. And Tom Cruise is an international star.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So he'll be making more money, you know, in overseas than he will here, and I'm sure he's perfectly fine with that.
Yep.
Oblivion, not a bad movie.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it.
You go check it out. There's not that many people seeing it now. The theaters are pretty empty.
Oh yeah, go see it now.
I have a nice relaxed
while you
feeling.
Can. Yeah, there'll be nobody there. It'll be nice, relaxed.
All right, moving on.
All right, number 3 this week we have 42. That had a weekend gross of $6.2 million. Total gross is $78.3 million on a budget of $40 million.
Not bad. Not bad for a, you know, baseball film. Baseball movies don't
biopic.
Make, they, yeah, and it's a biopic. Baseball movies don't make that much money. In general, to begin with,
yeah,
they make baseball movies fairly often, but it's not like they're cash cows, like, like a Tom Cruise international blockbuster.
Well, I mean, unless you do something like Moneyball and throw Brad Pitt in there.
Even then, Moneyball was, I think, 42 beat it. But when Moneyball came out, it was the number one opening weekend for a baseball movie, like $19 million opening weekend. So it's not like, you know, oh my god, it made so much money. It ended up making $75-80 million, which is not bad.
Yeah, no.
No, I mean, that's what 42's on its way. It's at 78 now. It'll probably top out around 90. Yeah, it's just the way baseball movies go. It's still America's pastime.
Yes, it is.
But people don't necessarily want to see movies about it.
Well, it's kind of boring to watch.
Hey, they can't all be Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck. I love that movie.
Misa Baseball.
And I'm totally serious about that. All right, let's get to number two. Because right, I actually have stuff to say about the top two movies.
All right, number two this week, we have Pain and Gain that had a weekend gross of $7.6 million. Total gross of $33.9 on a budget of $26.
Pretty good.
Mark Wahlberg's making some money.
The Rock, you know, $26 million yep, budget.
Yep, part three of four of The Rock this summer.
Yeah, it is part three of four Rock films. Probably my favorite of the three. Yeah, my favorite of the three. Because it would go Pain and Gain and then Snitch and then G.I. Joe Poop.
Yeah, G.I. Joe's was garbage. I never saw Snitch, but I didn't necessarily want to.
It's
so.
That's definitely a red box, you know, like rent this thing for a dollar, and it's not bad. The Rock is really good in Snitch. He is really good in Pain and Gain. All right, something interesting, though, about Rock's character. So Pain and Gain is based on a true story.
Yes.
They went through great lengths to explain that to us even during the movie.
Oh,
to remind us, this is still
true. Oh, by the way,
story.
This is still true.
That's a funny little touch. I thought that was cute.
Well, I mean, it came quite appropriately.
It did at that moment. Yeah. Pain and Gain is actually the name of the article itself. The original article written in, I want to say like 99, 2000, December 99, right around then. In the new Miami Times, and it's all online, and it's an epic three-part article, and it took me like a couple hours to read through everything, but it's fascinating, fascinating story. And it's fascinating reading it after seeing the movie to see what they changed.
Yes.
For example, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, his character, Peter Coyle, something like that, that character is not real.
Really?
He is actually comprised of like three or four different people.
Interesting.
That Daniel Lugo and his buddy something Dorball, I forgot his first name. Anthony Mackie and Mark Wahlberg's characters. Those guys are real people.
But they showed a picture of The Rock's character.
That's the weird thing. They showed a picture of some dude and we like this guy and he's out of prison now.
Yeah.
And it's actually all the guys that he represented, all those people are out of prison by this point.
Okay.
So that's not like a complete stretch.
Yeah.
Because it's like he represents one guy who was just a hired bodyguard, some hired muscle who like just was in on the first kidnapping, but had nothing else to do. Because they made sure to get everybody involved with the whole deal, no matter how small of a role you had.
Yeah,
even one guy that Daniel Lugo, Mark Wahlberg's character, this guy, he paid some dude from his gym. He's like, "Hey, you want to make a quick $500? Help me. I have to throw away some trash. I need to get rid of these barrels."
Yeah,
and it's the barrels of a couple of bodies. And the guy, I guess he didn't know that they were, maybe he didn't know, but that they were actually dumping the barrels in the water. And, you know, they weren't getting rid of them legally.
Exactly.
And that guy, he didn't know what they were dumping. He just thought there were barrels of stuff, trash. He didn't know what was in there, but he got pinched. And, you know, he served a little bit of time for his role.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't know what was going on. That's pretty interesting. So The Rock was all these different people that were
like involved.
All the small parts. Because that would have involved like another 6, 7, 8 characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see why you would want to just combine all those into one more compelling, you know, amalgamation of a character. Because it's just too much to keep track of all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But what's really interesting is all the stuff that really did happen. Like the things they didn't have to change. Because, remember, there's one part in The Rock's character where he's barbecuing hands and feet.
Yes, and that was when they said, this is still a true story.
Daniel Lugo, Mark Wahlberg's character, he was the one that was barbecuing hands and feet in front of a house, like not caring about who would see him.
Really?
Yeah, and then like the other dude, he showed up. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, oh, yeah, I guess it's not a good idea. And
barbecuing people's hands and feet.
Very, very weird, but man, they got a lot of that pretty accurate. Some of it was changed here and there just for dramatic reasons, I guess. But, man, it's a crazy, crazy story. There's some despicable, horrible people.
Oh, yes, they are.
They really are. It's a great read. It's a great read. I'd suggest, you know, if you're out there looking for a very interesting read, whether you see the movie or not.
I mean, despicable, horrible people tend to make really good stories.
It's a compelling story. It's really well written, very well researched. The most infuriating part, same thing as in the movie, is when I want to bring up something else too. The guy, Kershaw, his name in the movie is Vincent Kershaw, the millionaire, the first millionaire. He goes to the police and the police don't believe him because they think he has like it's just all tied to drugs and stuff. Yeah. You know, that really went down.
Oh, I'm sure.
The way, and it's infuriating how the police let that slip through their hands, and they were, like, purposely sabotaging the whole thing from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then more people died because of it.
It doesn't surprise me at all. That's kind of their MO.
Kind of sad.
The way they roll.
But it's weird how in the movie they're like, we're changing the names of a couple people to protect the innocent.
Yeah.
So they said Vincent Kershaw was not this guy's name, Tony Shalhoub's character.
Uh-huh.
But I pulled up the Pain and Gain article.
And they're real dude's real names right there.
Name, picture, everything.
Yeah.
It's his name is Mark Schiller. You know, ooh. I put his name out there, Mark Schiller. The same thing with the woman that played the Hungarian stripper who thought she was in the CIA.
Exactly.
They changed her name. But why? There's her picture right here posing with a snake. Some promo shot with her and a snake. It's
kind of ridiculous.
Some things are weird. Some of those things are little changes are weird. But it's very interesting to read that and then see the movie and see how they change what they change. Because you can see why some of the things were changed
from
what they did. And some things are just for casting reasons. You know, Rob Corddry.
Uh-huh.
He played the gym manager.
Yes.
His character was the next bodybuilder.
Huh.
You wouldn't be able to tell that from Rob Corddry. He just looked like a weirdo who liked bodybuilding competitions.
Yeah.
Maybe had a bit of a fetish. But in real life, he was actually a bodybuilder himself. Anyway, good article. Pretty good movie.
Yeah.
Not bad movie.
Wasn't bad.
But it only made how much?
Only made $7.6 million.
Now, why could that be?
Why?
How come all the movies seem to be sucked out of the movies 5
Well,
to
2? That is all because of the number one movie this week.
And what movie would that be?
That would be Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3.
A weekend gross of $175.3 million.
Yowza.
3 days, $175 million.
And that's just in America.
Yeah.
This movie came out in international markets
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Made, in those 2 weeks, including this weekend, $504 million. Iron Man 3 is now at $680 million worldwide.
So, this thing, after only being out for 2 weeks, it's made over $500 million.
It's almost at three quarters. It's going to get to $1 billion.
Next weekend.
It's getting to $1 billion worldwide at the minimum.
Next weekend, it'll be at $1 billion, guaranteed.
$175 million is the number two opening weekend ever in the U.S.
And on a budget of $200 million, they made their money back five times.
Even if you go overestimate marketing and all that stuff, say they doubled their budget with the marketing at $200 million, it cost them $400 overall. They're still going to make so much money on this freaking movie.
It's ridiculous.
Number two opening weekend in the U.S. Number five was The Dark Knight, made $158 million in 3 days. The Dark Knight Rises was number four, made $160 million.
Nice.
Harry Potter, the seventh one, but the second part of the seventh one.
Seven part two.
$169 million opening weekend.
$170 million.
And then Iron Man, $175 million.
Yeah.
The Avengers, $207 million, which is just absurd. That's an absurd amount of money. But there you go. Out of the top five, four of them are comic book sequels.
Which is absolutely insane. And one of them's a comic book. Well, I mean, what do you call the Avengers? Is it a sequel?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sequel to like four different movies. That's why it made so much money. Which is, it's insane. It's insane. And now they're going into what they're calling Phase 2. Which is just leading up to Avengers 2. So
of course.
Iron Man 3 is kicking off Phase 2. And if Iron Man 3 is kicking off Phase 2...
Here we go.
I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to have a dip when Thor comes out because nobody really cares about these Thor movies.
All right, so you want to talk about Thor real quick?
Or
just
want to
jump in? Because we saw that Thor teaser trailer.
Yes, we did.
Didn't show anything. Definitely looks different. Like it's not Kenneth Branagh's Thor anymore.
No, it is not Kenneth Branagh's Thor.
Which
the last one definitely was Kenneth Branagh's Thor.
Yeah, it definitely had that weirdness to it and the Shakespearean quality. This one, I don't even know what this one's about. He goes and gets Natalie Portman's character and brings her back to Asgard.
There's some bad things happening.
Bad things happen, and then he has to team up with Loki.
There's like some weird giant floating island ship thing.
That's like destroying stuff.
Well, it's just moving, and things are in its way. It's not like it's actively destroying things, you know? It's just moving in one direction, and there happens to be a building in its way, so the building is destroyed.
Not really explaining what's going on.
No, but it looks dark.
Directed by Alan Taylor. Let's see what this Alan Taylor is all about. I think this guy's a TV guy. Looking up his creds on the IMDb. Yep, 6 episodes of Game of Thrones is his most recent credit. Episode of Boardwalk Empire. 4 episodes of Boards of Death, so he's done a lot of HBO stuff. Couple episodes of Nurse Jackie, 4 of Mad Men, 1 of Law and Order, 9 of Sopranos. This guy's worked on some big
HBO,
shows.
HBO, yeah.
2 for
HBO.
Rome, 1 for Lost.
That's still, yeah.
But he's a TV director. He has. I don't see any films on here.
Well, that all depends on what you consider HBO.
It's that weird middle ground. They're long form films.
Yeah.
You know, they are done cinematically, like widescreen, and
that's what I'm saying. I mean, Game of Thrones, you can argue that it's just an episodic movie.
In 1995, he directed Palookaville. An hour and 32 minutes. Jerry and his two pals are just looking for some easy money to help them break out of their nowhere lives.
Awesome. Good for them.
Yeah, it's got William Forsythe, Vincent Gallo. Not bad. All right, so that's the director of Thor, Dark World, Alan Taylor. Don't really have any, I don't know, some decent TV shows.
And so that means we're going to get a Hulk movie now with
that's
Mr.
Still,
Ruffalo.
That might still be post-Avengers 2.
Okay.
Because it's not, Avengers is already slated to come out 2015.
Oh, wow.
So they're doing Thor this November. They just did Iron Man. Thor is in November. Captain America is next year. Captain America, the new one, is supposed to be like a 70s-style political thriller, which is going to be fun.
Uh-huh.
And then Guardians of the Galaxy. That's a tongue twister. That's probably late 2014, early 2015, and then Avengers 2 2015. All so right. they have nowhere to put Hulk in there.
Yeah.
And no time to squeeze it in.
So, Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3. in terms of Iron Man movies, Iron Man, the first one, good.
It was good,
It was good. I enjoyed it. It was definitely, you know, I went back and saw it a couple times in theaters. I haven't seen it in a while. Don't really feel the need to see it.
Yeah, no.
Second one, hot mess of a film.
Yeah, pretty much.
Had its moments. Had good actors, but kind of a wasted movie. I think it was a writer's strike movie, so it wasn't very, just wasn't very good. Iron Man 3. Pretty good, I'd say. It's tighter. It's a tighter story.
Is it your favorite of the Iron Man movies?
I think so. It's hard because we just saw it.
Yeah.
But I think on one viewing, I would say it's my favorite of them. And that might be just because written and directed by Shane Black. Did you notice the Shane Black-isms? I mean, the movie starts with Robert Downey Jr. doing a voiceover narration and then like screwing it up and then like, all right, hold on, let's go back and start. You know, it's like he said, he quotes something and it's like, who said it? I don't know who said it.
I just said it.
That makes two famous people who said it. Some of the quotes even more famous. That's such a Shane Black opening narration while over an image of Iron Man suits blowing up.
Yep.
Like, what's going on here? And then it definitely has its Shane Black touches. It all takes place, inexplicably takes place around Christmas.
Yes.
No reason for it to.
Well, it's just because it's a Shane Black movie.
Exactly. All of his movies.
All his movies take care, it's all Christmas.
All take place around Christmas for no reason whatsoever, just so we can play Jingle Bells
on
the
much.
Soundtrack at some point. But it was good.
I really enjoyed Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin.
Awesome.
He's great. They ask him to do some interesting things. And they do some very interesting things with that character.
Oh, do they ever.
Don't want to get too spoilery.
I don't want to talk. We really can't talk about it.
Can't really talk about it without giving it away.
They
definitely, there's some changes made that I can tell you that I talked to my brother yesterday. Yeah. Whoa, did they piss him off? That movie pissed him off.
Made him angry.
That movie made him angry.
Well, I made the comment too. I mean,
well, you said you're angry, but you still seem to enjoy the movie.
Well, it's because I
think it turned him off completely.
Really? So it's like it's like his the last the X3 X-Men United.
Well, the
when
Phoenix.
They butchered the Dark Phoenix saga, and I will never forgive them for that ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
I think it's along those lines for him. Yep. Yeah. Yes, it is. I'm trying to think of what sets this one apart from the other Iron Man movies outside of the story. They do really good with Pepper Potts. I thought they used that character pretty well.
Yeah, they did.
It was integrated into the story and into Iron Man's character arc pretty well.
I was really surprised that they, in all the previews and in everything, they didn't mention Guy Pearce whatsoever.
You never really. I only see posters of him.
And then all of a sudden, he's just like in the movie.
And he's like a big part of
and
it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm already a Guy Pearce fan, but I thought he was really, really good in it.
I enjoyed it.
It was fun seeing him in such a big movie and doing something that he seemed to be enjoying.
Yeah.
You know, he should be. I feel like he's a guy who should be a bigger star. You know?
Well, he definitely should be a bigger star. He's quite a talented actor.
Very talented. Actually, the whole movie has a related cast. Rebecca Hall as like an old love interest of Tony Stark who comes back up. I always think she's great. What's his name? Fat old Favreau.
Yeah.
He looked like he was having fun.
Well, yeah.
Doing the old Happy Hogan thing. Exactly. And not having to direct the whole movie this time.
Yeah, all he had to do was hang around and wear a fake mullet for a little while.
Fake mullet for a flashback scene. And yeah, pretty easy going for the old Favreau's. It was good. It was good. But it's a lot like Dark Knight Rises. The least amount of Tony Stark in Iron Man suit of all the Iron Man movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like... I mean, Batman didn't show for 45 minutes in Dark Knight Rises, and even then he was in like two scenes.
Yeah, exactly.
Iron Man, most of this movie is Tony Stark out of a suit having panic attacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe turning into a secret agent of sorts.
Yeah, he was more James Bondy than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. He's a mechanic, Chris.
He's a mechanic. He is a mechanic, so he can do whatever he wants, apparently, at the drop of a hat with like MacGyver style.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a whole section where he's hanging out with some kid in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you...
Having panic attacks?
Like, how'd you guys get there, man? That's such a, like, a tangent, you know? But it worked.
No, it did.
Yeah, it worked. I thought it was good. I would say, yeah, for me, favorite of the Iron Man movies, which would then de facto make it, for me, favorite of all the Marvel films. Because I liked Iron Man more than I liked the Avengers. I know a lot of people are like, oh, the Avengers, it's so great. It's so great, man. That's what I think those people sound like.
Seriously, the more I think about the Avengers, and the more time goes by, the less I remember about it.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. There were aliens,
In this movie, they mentioned a wormhole a couple times. The first time someone mentioned a wormhole, I was like, what the hell is he talking about, wormhole? And then later, someone else was talking about a wormhole. And I was like, oh, that thing was a wormhole in the Avengers. I get it. Outside of those little touches, though, Iron Man 3 does stand alone as an independent film. It is.
Yes.
I mean, he's dealing with the emotional ramifications of post-traumatic stress disorder of what happened in the Avengers. Yeah. But still, outside of that, it's its own movie. It's got its own thing going on with terrorism and profiting from terrorism, both in the...
Political
and the application of it, yes. And the stopping of it. Very, you know, it had some things on its mind.
Playing both sides.
But then again, it's a summer comic book blockbuster, so even though there's things there about oil and all this stuff, it's really very small and doesn't. It's just there for a little bit of subtext to keep things humming along, but it's not really that important.
No.
It's still all about Robert Downey Jr.
and
being Mandarin. Being all quippy. And the Mandarin being all over the top and pretty cool. I enjoyed the Mandarin.
So did I.
So, all right, Iron Man 3, on our rating scale, from seeing it in theaters opening night to waiting for it on HBO or TBS.
See it in theaters.
I would say, yeah, definitely see it in theaters.
I mean, don't necessarily, I mean, I don't, I would say stay away from opening night if you can.
Oh, yeah, well, it would be already past that, but, you know, theoretically speaking.
Even theoretically speaking, I mean, for as big as a movie as it was, it doesn't. You don't need to be there at midnight.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you see a matinee, save a couple bucks.
No, exactly. Just see it in theaters.
It's definitely worth going to see in theaters.
It's a big budget action movie. See it on the big screen.
We did not see it in 3D, but I heard the 3D wasn't very good. It kind of detracts from several scenes.
Yeah,
post-converted 3D on top of
it
that.
It didn't look like it needed 3D at all.
So definitely save the money there. Don't see it on the 3D. But hey, Iron Man 3, we enjoyed it. Definitely enjoyed it.
I mean, the rest of the world enjoyed it, too.
The rest of the world seems to be enjoying it, so...
$500 million.
I'm looking forward to seeing where Marvel goes with Phase 2. Phase 2 is interesting.
I'm glad to see Marvel back up on its legs again. Because, you know, 20 years ago, they were filing for bankruptcy.
That's true. That's true. They've come a long way. Well, now Disney owns them, too.
Exactly.
So they're fine. They're fine. All right, so we got new movies coming out on DVD this week. We got a few of them. The ladies in the house. We got a lot of lady listeners, Drew.
Yeah.
They might be interested in Safe Haven coming out on DVD.
Probably.
That's the one with Josh Duhamel.
That random white guy.
And
from the Transformers movies.
And who was the chick? I can't remember who the chick was.
I have no idea.
Some lady. Doesn't matter. So, ladies, go ahead and grab yourself a copy of Safe Haven. Get a bottle of wine, right?
Sit down, is that what they do?
Curl up with your cat. I don't know what they do. The dudes, meanwhile, they can rent Jack Reacher.
Oh, awesome. I want to see.
It's not bad.
I'm looking at, I just love Werner Herzog, and he plays the
Werner
bad guy.
Herzog, yeah, he plays a bad guy. He's, you know, he's in a couple scenes, but it's great because he's Werner Herzog. Tom Cruise is awesome. I'd say Jack Reacher is worth watching just for this one car chase scene that's in the middle of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And throughout the car chase scene, they went through great lengths to over and over get the camera. First, you see, like, the big action. The car swerves around, does this, does that, crashes, and then keeps moving forward, and then the camera all of a sudden starts pushing forward and tries to get as close as it can to the window so you can see Tom Cruise behind the wheel actually driving him.
So he's just showing off his stunt work.
Just showing off that this guy, if you have Tom Cruise doing stunts in your movie, you make sure people know that he's doing these freaking stunts.
Well, it's the way he does it. It's the way he rolls.
And it's awesome. It's awesome. It's pretty much worth it. That's worth the price of admission right there. And it's a pretty good movie. Written and directed by the guy who wrote Usual Suspects, and he wrote and directed Way of the Gun, so...
Very nice.
Those are a couple of good movies.
Both great movies.
And then, coming out on DVD, we didn't get a chance to see it in theaters because it was self-distributed. That's just the way it is with these small little independent movies. But, you know, I'll make sure we get it on DVD this week so we can talk about it next week. I want to talk about it next week. Upstream Color.
Oh, nice.
Shane Kurtz's follow-up to Primer.
Yes.
It's hitting the divot this week in Blu-ray as well.
Awesome.
For you you cinephiles with the visual files or whatever. I really, really want to see that. Really interesting-looking independent film. Can't even sum it up what it's about. Just go online. Check out a trailer for Upstream Color.
If it's anything like Primer, it's going to blow my mind.
Exactly. And the reviews for it have been great.
Awesome.
From all the festivals, it's been like this is a worthy follow-up
good
to
for
Primer.
Him.
So.
Because Primer, man, that was...
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
That's good. All right, so that's what's on DVD. What's in theaters, Drew?
The only thing that we care about is The Great Gatsby.
The Great Gatsby!
Directed by Baz Luhrmann, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Joel Edgerton, Tobey Maguire, Carey Mulligan.
Great cast.
Yeah, never read the book. It was required reading in high school, too.
Yeah.
I just did the Cliff Notes.
Book schmucks. Who reads books?
I did. I actually, that was the only book that I didn't read in high school. I read everything else.
I
don't know why I didn't read it.
I actually read an article today online that was compilation of snippets of reviews from like 29, I think, is when the book came out. It kind of got bashed when it came out, like by all the literary critics. A lot of them were like, it's pulpy, it's surface level, it's not that good. You know, now it's required reading, like you said. Everyone's read it, blah, blah, blah. Books exist so we can make movies out of them.
Okay.
That's the Crespo official opinion. Actually,
gotcha.
You can go to chriscrespo.com, and if you search book to film, you get a whole bunch of articles of my analysis of books that have been turned into movies and how they did, you know?
Nice.
Some of them are pretty good. Some of them suck. It's up to you to decide which is which.
Oh, well.
And I'm talking about the quality of the articles, not the books.
I was just about to say.
I wrote them over a period of several years. Great Gatsby. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a Baz Luhrmann fan. William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet with the end, the plus sign.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an awesome movie.
Yeah, it was good. The only man, yeah.
And that's a style with the taking something that's an old-timey story and updating it and doing it like it's like a fresh modern take.
Exactly.
You know, and Great Gatsby, while it looks like it's of its time period, it does take place.
It also
place
looks
in
very
the,
modern.
It still looks very modern. Jay-Z is like the soundtrack supervisor or whatever, the music supervisor.
OJ Zizzle.
So, I'm looking forward to it. This weekend?
This weekend.
Awesome. And that's it?
It'll be fun. Yeah, I mean, there are other movies.
But no one cares about them.
Whatever.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
We care not,
but we do care to get into the Crespo Disco so we can take a quick break. I need to refill my Dos Equis.
Dos Equis.
Because it is
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayonnaise. So
happy Hellman's Day, everybody.
Happy Cinco to you, Drew. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, sir. Clink.
Clink. Last of my beer. All right. So here we go. We're going to get into the Crespo Disco. Got a song here queued up from a film. Let's see if you can figure out which soundtrack it's from. I'll let you know when we get back.
You can't. You can't. It's just that easy. You can't.
Well, so you probably won't be able
to. You don't know what the song is.
This is going to be a tricky one for some of you people. Some of you might know it right away. We'll see. So here we go. Crespo Disco. Enjoy. We'll be back with the Crespo Dome. Got a lot of stuff playing for you guys. So we'll be right back.
Thoreau Grande, I laughed at all his words. I thought he was a bitter man. He spoke of women's ways. The trap you'd and the use you before you even know. For love is blind and you're far too kind. Don't ever let it show. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was stronger, the can-can's such a pretty show. Dressing rooms are great. They come on strong, and it ain't too long, but I make you feel a man. But love is blind, and you soon will find you're just a boy.
Welcome back to the second half of episode 17.
Wow, that's a lot of episodes.
Of Cinema Crespo Disco, episode 17.
That's a lot of episodes.
Plus a couple of bonus episodes in there.
Bonus.
That makes for 20 episodes total after this one.
So unofficially, it is 20 episodes?
Yeah.
We're drinking Dos Equis today as well.
Oh, that's true. We're drinking Dos Equis.
Unofficially 20 episodes.
Unofficially 20 episodes. It's official episode 17 plus 3 bonus. That makes 20. We are good at math.
Kind of.
So we want to thank you all, everyone, for downloading and listening and sharing with your friends, for sticking with us, you know, during these beginning months. The show has been evolving quite a bit since then. We've added some new things. We've added guests. You know, it's a beast. It's a moving... living, breathing beast that we are now just trying to grapple to the ground and make into something that's worthwhile entertainment for your dollar, which is
zero.
So, yeah,
I think we're doing a pretty good job for $0.
Definitely money back guarantee on this show, for sure. So, hey, we're going to remind you again, please go to chriscrespo.com. You can check out back episodes of the show, plus all my my reviews are up there, a whole bunch of other stuff, pictures, street team pictures. Download the show on iTunes, rate the show 5 stars, leave us a nice review. That'll help us out so much. But, you know, you knew that already. You're good people. So here we go. We're going to get right into the Crespo Dome. Are we ready, Drew?
Oh, yeah. Let's do this, bro.
You ready for some Crespo Dome action?
I'm ready.
We've had a lot of guests lately, so now it's just you and me for this week.
Yeah, I know. No filler.
I'm looking forward to it.
All killer.
Oh.
Where's that from?
That's
something terrible. I can't believe I even brought it up.
All filler? Oh, no. No filler, all killer?
All killer, no filler.
That sounds like, is that from a movie or a radio?
It's
like a radio joke.
I don't even want to tell you what it's from. It's so terrible. I'm so embarrassed that I even brought it up.
Now you gotta tell.
Nope, not going to happen.
No, it's got, you gotta,
nope.
You gotta do it, dude. You can't bring up something on a show and not bring it up. All right, people, now you gotta use Google. If you don't know already, I don't know. I'll Google it later. But here we go. We got a pretty packed Crespo Dome this week. We talked about it at the top of the show. I wanted to get into a little more detail here, just a little bit more. Netflix had that great purge where, what was the number, 17?
Over 1,700 titles.
Almost 2,000 movies overnight were yanked from the Netflix. They did add about 500 at the same time, including, you know, there are some good ones in there that they just added. Cabin in the Woods, they just added. Great movie.
Great movie. I love that.
Unofficial.
Starring Thor.
Unofficial bonus Netflix pick of the week right there. Starring Thor, yes. So I watched that last night, rewatching it. That's the third time I've seen the movie, and it's crazy good. It's really, really good. They added Into the Wild, the one where Emile Hirsch plays the guy, the rich kid.
Ooh,
who,
that's actually quite a good movie
as
well.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And he goes up to the woods and the cold with like a knife and no jacket and freezes to death.
Yeah, that's his own damn fault.
Inspired a bunch of hippies. But here, the reason why so many movies were purged from the Netflix.
Yeah, why?
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 It's not like they're being dicks about it, or, you know, like, ooh, let's take all these movies away. Yeah. The Viacom deal that they had expired.
Okay.
And Viacom is massive.
They own lots of movies.
Lots of different companies own lots of different movies. Also, a deal they had with Warner Brothers expired. So a lot of old Warner Brothers movies
gone.
Were yanked. Those movies are now available in the Warner Brothers Archive, which is what they call their instant streaming service.
Okay.
Disney, for a while, Disney was going to do their own in-house streaming service.
Yeah.
And then they were like, I don't know, I guess they thought the cost was too much at this point, or they didn't feel like...
Or they're spending their money elsewhere.
They felt like spending their money elsewhere. So that's when they inked the deal with Netflix recently. I mean, Netflix paid a ton of money, but starting in like 2016, they're going to have exclusive rights to Disney streaming stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a huge, huge coup for them. That's why they're letting some of these deals expire. Because like the Viacom deal and the Warner Brothers deal, that involves movies that are already available on like Hulu Plus and all the other streaming sites that are out there. Redbox is doing streaming stuff. So a lot of these movies will be available through those other sources. And Netflix is very interested in
exclusivity
at this point. They're going for that route. They've been all about television because... They're following viewer patterns. They have the data. They have the statistics. And they know
what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. And they know that people love to watch television shows on Netflix. Yeah. That's what people have been using it primarily for. So they're focusing on getting licensing for old TV shows.
Yeah.
If you want to watch a TV show, there's a good chance now.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
The Wonder Years, for the longest time, the Wonder Years, for being how popular that TV show is, it was notorious for not being available on DVD because of licensing issues with like a lot of the music and stuff on those shows. Netflix comes in and boom, they got the whole thing on there. They did just lose part of the Viacom deal. They did just lose all 16 seasons or whatever of South Park.
Oh.
But I think they still have the South Park movie. Which is interesting.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is good. It's a great movie, but all the seasons are gone. So you know, it's just part of the Netflix stratagem. They're going to be taking movies down, adding them. That's what they do. They focus on TV. They're trying to do original stuff, but that's not going to fill the coffers. That's not enough. you know, just doing a House of Cards here and a Hemlock Grove there isn't gonna bring in the subscribers. And apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but Hemlock Grove apparently horrible.
Really?
Horrible show. The one produced by Eli Roth. I think he directed a couple episodes. It's pretty much about a kid who's a werewolf.
Okay, sounds terrible.
It's supposed to be pretty sad. Pretty sad. But yeah, so that's a story with Netflix. I think it's still a pretty good service. Good bang for your buck, especially if you're into old movies and foreign films, indie films and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Definitely worthwhile. All right, so let's get into the next part of the Crespo Dome. Drew, we don't have a guest.
No, we don't.
So there's no Drewster Cogburn versus the world. We've done four games, right?
Yeah, it's all right. I think I can take a week off of battling the world.
You think you can take a week off from battling the world? That's
I can't
fine.
Take a week off from battling the world. It's not allowed.
What do boxers do between fights?
I guess they spar.
In
practice.
Time for a little sparring round. That's exactly what I wrote at the top here. The DC versus the world sparring round. I got a... got a little game here that's just for you. It's just to see how you do.
Awesome.
Keep your muscles, your trivia muscles flexing.
It's good. I like it.
All right. That and I like coming up with these little games.
I know you do.
It's pretty fun.
I don't mind playing your games, Chris.
Okay, thank you. This one is called Bruce, Spike, or Jones? Parentheses.
Bruce Lee, Spike Lee, or Tommy Lee Jones?
Parentheses, Tommy Lee.
Got it.
Bruce, Spike, or Jones? I have 10 quotes here. Quotes.
Oh, man.
I'm going to read you the quote. You tell me who said it.
All right.
Bruce, okay. Spike, or Jones.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm going to jump around this list here. So let's start with this one. Quote. Obviously, they're all quotes. Real living is living for others. Who said it? Real living is living for others. Was that Bruce Lee, Spike Lee, or Tommy Lee Jones?
Bruce Lee.
That is correct. That is a Bruce Lee quote. I'll give you a check mark for that one there. It is very zen. Be careful now. Be careful, buddy. Here we go. Quote, for me, I believe in God. God is real. Is that Bruce Lee, Spike Lee, or Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones.
That's incorrect. That was Spike Lee. Spike Lee believes in God. God is real. It's a Spike Lee. Okay, ready?
Yep.
Quote, I think people who have faults are a lot more interesting than people who are perfect. Bruce Lee, Spike Lee, or Tommy Lee Jones?
Maybe that one's Tommy Lee Jones.
That's a Spike Lee quote.
Spike Lee,
That's a Spike Lee.
Why do I always think...
I don't know.
Spike Lee, maybe Spike... I don't know.
Maybe these quotes are all kind of vaguely similar for a reason.
Yeah. Maybe.
Quote. Oh, that's a pretty good one. All right, here we go. Quote. If you spend too much time thinking about a thing, you'll never get it done.
That's Bruce Lee.
That is Bruce Lee. Quote, the world's not a very comfortable place if you have a nightmare to face. It even rhymes. The world's not a very comfortable place if you have a nightmare to face.
Say that in Bane voice.
The world's not a very comfortable place if you have a nightmare to face.
Tommy Lee Jones.
That is Tommy Lee Jones. Nice. Good work there. I don't know why Bane gave that one to you.
I don't know. It just sounded like something Bane would say for some reason.
All right, here we go. Quote, kindness and politeness are not overrated at all. They're underused.
Spike.
That's a Tommy Lee.
Oh.
That sounds like an old man grumbling about.
Hey, Spike Lee sounds like an old man grumbling a lot.
He does sound like an old man sometimes. All right. Quote, to hell with circumstances, I create opportunities.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Bruce Lee.
Oh, I didn't think.
You didn't think he would say to hell with circumstances?
Yeah, exactly.
But he did.
I would think he would be more zen about the way he would say that.
He did. All right, we got three left here. Here we go. Quote, I'm not in this world to live up to your expectations, and you're not in this world to live up to mine.
Spike.
Bruce.
Bruce again.
That's a great quote.
It is.
I love that one. Human beings are glorious and preposterous characters.
Spike.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I'm so terrible at this.
And the final quote. Finally, here we go. It has been my observation that parents kill more dreams than anybody.
For a third and final time, Spike.
Spike Lee is correct.
Yes.
All right, here he goes. Let's see. Out of 10, you got 1,
like
2,
four.
3, 4, 5.
Ooh, not bad.
You got 5 percent. Out of 10, 50%. So, you know, that's still a fail.
It's failing, yeah, 100%. Put it in 100% there. Failing.
But it's only a sparring round, so. That's some good stuff in there, though. I thought there were some good quotes.
Oh, definitely.
And there are vaguely, like...
I mean, they're all vaguely similar.
I think those three guys could sit down over tea and have a similar discussion on philosophy and worldview.
If you want that, just watch that. Man, what was that weird thing on HBO with Tommy Lee Jones and
Samuel L. Jackson?
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, it's like a play that they turn into a movie.
Yeah.
They're just sitting in a room talking for an hour and a half.
Yep.
I watched about 20 minutes of it.
You would think it would be boring, but for some reason I watched the whole thing and it was really interesting.
You're into it? You're into it? I tried, man. For some reason, maybe I just wasn't in the right mindset at the time.
Yeah, yeah. It got me. It was good.
It's just some philosophical, existential.
That's all it is.
About,
yep. About everything.
I gotta give it another shot. All right, so that was Drewcy Cogburn versus the World Sparring Round. Not bad. Not bad, Drew. Got a couple some movie news here.
What are you talking about? It was terrible.
All right, you did terrible. I'm just trying to make you feel. I was just trying to make you feel better about yourself, dude.
Nope.
Just trying to be a good friend.
Nope.
Good buddy.
Nope.
Good pal.
Nope.
Here we go.
Tough love, bro.
Tough love. Here we go. Got some movie news in development.
All right.
Sequels. 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 Die Hard 6. They're already working on Die Hard 6.
God.
And they're saying they'll do it if Bruce Willis is into it, but of course they'll pay him so much money that he'll be into it,
yep.
The last one didn't make much money here, so it must have made a ton of movie. It must have made a ton of money overseas to justify doing another one. And they're keeping with the international theme. Uh-huh. Die Hard 6 will take place in Tokyo.
Of course.
I don't even think they have a script. They don't have a story.
Nope.
They're just like, yeah, we'll just do one in Tokyo now.
Okay. Why not?
Bruce Willis in Tokyo.
Oh, it's going to be so terrible.
Oh, the cultural clash.
Oh, hysterics. He's so much taller than everybody else.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, my goodness.
I'm on vacation.
If he says I'm on vacation one time in this movie, I will do nothing. Because what can I do?
It's exactly. Just, already, you can bitch done. About it on this show.
I will bitch about it on this show. There you go, Drew. Also in development, Men in Black 4.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't see the last one.
You know what? The last one actually wasn't bad. I enjoyed myself. It's a time travel story. James Brolin. Josh Brolin is doing a young Tommy Lee Jones. Speaking of Tommy Lee Jones.
Man, I wonder if that's on the Netflix.
Not on the instant.
Not on the instant.
Not on the instant. You always get it on the divot. It's good. It's good. It's fun. It's not over the top great, but it's better than the second one. The second one is just completely forgettable.
Yeah.
The first one's fun. Awesome. Second one's forgettable. The third one is actually... I thought they did a pretty good job, especially considering there were a lot of troubles and like bad press coming out of the production. They had a scheduled like 2 to 4 week break in the middle of production to work on the script. Like they were going to film this part of the script and then they were going to stop and Will Smith was going to play with it for 2 to 4 weeks. That ended up being like a 2 month break. And there was even rumors that are they even going to pick up and start filming the second half? Will they even finish this movie? They're doing it on the fly. So I went into it expecting a complete train wreck. Actually, it was pretty good. Not bad. I don't know if I really want to see a fourth one, but they're doing it. And that's, you know, just get used to it. Get used to it.
It sounds like a terrible idea.
Paul Thomas Anderson news.
PTA.
He of Boogie Nights, Magnolia, There Will Be Blood. Most recently, The Master. Did I tell you about, did I mention how my mom, the voicemail my mom left? Oh, I should have saved the voicemail. I should have played just this little part of the voicemail.
Yeah, you should have.
Where my mom calls me, leaves a voicemail, which is like, hey, son, blah, blah, blah. We're watching The Master.
Duh.
And immediately I can hear the confusion and the frustration. we're watching The Master, and she's like, yeah,
yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, and then she's like, we don't know about this movie. And so they're obviously like in the middle of it.
Yep.
And then she's like, all right, talk to you later. And then I talked to her the next day. She's like, we didn't like it. Not necessarily they didn't like it.
They just don't.
My dad did sleep through it, most of it.
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
Yeah.
She was like, I just don't not get it.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a character study.
It's a dense movie.
And he's a really layers. Messed up character.
I felt like I had to watch it twice just before I could write anything on it.
Yeah.
But I eventually did. And when it hit DVD, I wrote a little article on it. Yeah, it's a crazy movie.
Yes, it is.
It's a crazy movie. That cracked me up, her voice. I could hear it in her voice, and I just started laughing. I was like, oh.
Of course.
They red-boxed The Master.
Yep.
So many people are going to red-box that movie and be like, what the hell is this thing?
You see, that's the way I feel about, like, Itchy the Killer on Netflix. Like, some poor bastard's going to just put on Itchy the Killer and be scarred for life.
Like, this looks like fun. Oh,
no, it's not. I mean, yeah, but no.
People just don't know sometimes. They don't know. But Paul Thomas Anderson, now, after he made that movie, very difficult, very dense movie, he's going a little more, slightly more mainstream with his next one. And he's actually, the Master was done with Annapurna Pictures, which is Megan Ellison, a 25-year-old daughter of Oracle CEO Larry Ellison, who's worth, this dude's worth like $60 billion.
Awesome.
So by default, she's worth millions and millions and millions.
Yeah.
So she's been making movies with Paul Thomas Anderson, the Coen brothers. She did Killing Them Softly.
Awesome.
Zero Dark Thirty. This chick has great, great taste.
Yeah.
They did The Master, but Paul Thomas Anderson's doing this with Warner Brothers.
Okay.
So that's already an indication that this is something that's more sellable, mainstream. More mainstream, and it's actually an adaptation of the Thomas Pynchon novel Inherent Vice. Which is a pretty popular little novel amongst literary snobbish circles.
You know? Okay, so I haven't read it.
I haven't read it either. Read up a little bit about it, you know, in relation to this. Apparently it's about a guy, like a private eye type dude, where his vice is that he's a pothead.
Sweet.
And he's like wrapped up in some crazy, typical pulp novel, you know, mystery type thing. He's casting Joaquin Phoenix again.
Okay.
Working with the man again, Joaquin Phoenix. He's going to be his pothead private eye.
Awesome.
Going through some crazy film noirish type story.
Yep.
So even with that setup alone, that's already much easier to sell than The Master.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Joaquin Phoenix plays a pothead private investigator.
Okay.
Go. People are going to be sold. That's supposed to... it's kind of an allegory about Scientology and a man who sees himself in the past and this other dude. And, you know, it's like... the log line is much more succinct. So it's three movies recently announced development. Obviously, we're more interested in the Paul Thomas Anderson one.
Of course.
All right. I've been wanting to do this for a few weeks now. We've had so many guests, so many things have been going on. I'm finally going to squeeze it into episode 17, the latest Crespo Disso book review.
Number two.
Book review number two. Book club number two. If you're a part of the book club, hopefully you enjoyed the last book, Superman versus Hollywood. That's a fun little read.
Yep.
Obviously, all my books are going to be movie related in some way. This book came out in mid '90s. I should have looked this up ahead of time. 1995. It's called "Making Movies" by Sidney Lumet.
Okay.
Sidney Lumet is a great filmmaker. Was a great filmmaker. He actually passed fairly recently. I think last year he just died at like 82, 83 years old. There's a list in here of all the movies he made up to this last one he did was you've seen it, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think that's still on the Netflix. I don't think that was a Victim of the Purge. Going all the way back to the 70s, he did Serpico, Murder on the Orient Express, Dog Day Afternoon, Network, one of my favorites, The Wiz with Michael Jackson.
Uh-huh.
In the 80s, you know, the movies he did weren't so popular, but there were some good ones like The Verdict and Daniel. He did Family Business, which is that Matthew Broderick, Sean Connery, Dustin Hoffman,
Family
of Thieves movie. He's done some very interesting films, a lot of movies. His first film, was it his first film? I think so. 12 Angry Men.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was his very, very first movie. That's a fantastic
film. It's a classic.
It is an absolute classic. He's good. He's really good. And then he wrote, this is like, I don't know, 180, 190 pages on just how do you make a movie from start to finish. And it's in chronological order. If you want to know anything about making a movie, this is the book. If you want to make movies, if you just want to know about the backstage stuff, like, for example, the chapters, it's the first chapter is about the director. Chapter two is the script. Chapter 3 is style, 4 is actors, 5 is camera. I mean, he breaks everything down all the way up to the marketing and the release. Because it is written in the 90s, a lot of the technical stuff, it's very specific to film and lenses. There's no digital filmmaking here whatsoever. But that's, you know, the technical aspects of the movies are, it's a very small portion of the book. It helps if you've seen his movies because he uses his own work as examples. And he's worked with everyone, so he has like little anecdotes here and there about Sean Connery and Katharine Hepburn and Al Pacino, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a good book. It's a very easy read. It tells you a lot about the industry, lot about how this guy does it.
How many pages?
This one is 218 pages.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. Quick read, short chapters. It's very, very good. Making Movies by Sunil May. Chris Crespo, Cinema Crespediso,
Seal
book
of
review,
approval.
Seal of Approval, book review of the month, book club there.
Of the month? No.
Yeah, of the quarter.
I'm about to say, you're more like quarterly, bro.
I can't commit to monthly. I got too much going on, man. I got to pick another book now. I got to put that out there. All right, so there you go. Moving on. I wanted to mention this too, really, because this blew my mind when I read this article. I don't even know what to say about it. I just want to mention that Seth MacFarlane,
yes,
who I guess now I officially at this point wish I was his best friend.
Okay.
At the very least, I wish I was his best buddy.
Okay.
He installed in his home the Prima Cinema. Prima Cinema is a $35,000 digital box that you put in your house, and you can project first run movies into your home for $500 a pop. So, for example, yesterday or on Friday, Seth MacFarlane, he could have woken up in his morning
and walked
over to his little in-home theater, $500, Iron Man 3, right there in the comfort of his home. Like pristine digital projection.
Yeah, 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 like theater quality.
I only read about that because he's adding an addition to his home theater.
Uh-huh.
He's spending up to $1 million.
So he can
add an IMAX home entertainment theater. He's doing an IMAX in his house.
He's building a LIMAX at his place.
Yes. He might be doing like an actual, up to $1 million. Might be going full on like official IMAX. He's Seth MacFarlane, dude. He's got the cash money, apparently.
That mother.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you want to say it. You want to say it.
Oh,
isn't that something? Isn't that cool?
That's awesome.
I wish I could have an IMAX in my own house.
Oh, me too. I'll sacrifice the house. I'll just live in the IMAX.
Yeah, right?
I mean...
It's huge. I can live there.
That's what I'm saying.
I can make the second row. That's my sitting area. That's my office. This is where I sleep over here in the first row. Yeah, man, I just want to bring that up. Just make everyone jealous.
That's pretty crazy.
Let everyone know how jealous I am of that. All right, here we go. So I got a couple questions.
Sweet.
Obviously, we got our question from Billy D.
Awesome.
Which I have right here. Weekly question from Billy D. You ready?
Question 17.
Yeah. That's right. Question 17. Who wins in the Crespo Dome? It's a Crespo Dome battle.
Gotcha.
If all 5 John Connors get in. And then this is how he describes the Connors. He describes them as the 7 Dwarves, sort of. There's a Scarface Connor, who I think that's the John Connor you see like in a flashback scene in the first Terminator.
Yeah.
Furlong Connor.
Okay, yeah.
Obviously, Eddie Furlong. Terminator 2. Mopey Bum Connor. Nick Stahl in the third one. Batman Connor.
Yeah.
This Terminator Salvation Batman. Yep. Or WB Connor? Who's WB Connor? Is that from the Sarah Connor Chronicles? Was that on the WB channel? Is that even a WB anymore?
I think so.
Isn't the CW?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I never saw that.
Man, I'm trying to think who that kid... I watched, like, 3 episodes or something.
So there was that kid.
Yeah, there's some kid.
We're going to assume WB Connor is the kid from Sarah. All right, yeah. So if all 5 of them battled in the Crespo Dome, as actors, we have Scarface Connor, who's a nobody.
Yeah, Christian Bale wins.
Christian Bale.
Batman Connor wins. He's freaking Batman Connor.
Yeah.
He's Batman. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I can't. Yeah.
He whips up on Eddie Furlong. I don't know who Scarface Connor is, but
yeah,
I'm pretty sure
Stahl,
Batman's going to whip up on him.
He beats them all up.
Yep.
A better actor beats them all up.
Of course.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. Scarface Connor might give Christian Bale a run for his money. I think I remember him being kind of
a big guy.
A big dude.
I'm still going to go with super angry Christian Bale, Batman, Connor.
Okay.
Because he was pretty angry around that time.
He was.
Man, that's a lot of John Connors. WB Connor. Screw that guy.
Yeah, I don't even know who the hell that kid is.
That's the one that Eddie Furlong kills. To make him feel
Nick
better.
And Nick Stahl. He kills Nick Stahl, too. Oh. Nick Stahl can't act.
Poor Nick Stahl. All right, next question. This comes from at Sir Kyle on the Twitter. He's been giving questions almost every week, which
very
is really
nice.
Cool. At Sir Kyle asked, biggest movie flop for you personally, as in what movie were you most like anticipating and then you went and saw it and it just shat the bed?
X-Men 3.
X-Men 3. You mentioned it already. X-Men 3.
I mean, that's like sacred comic book lore to me.
That storyline, the Dark Phoenix.
The Dark Phoenix saga. It really, I don't know, I connected with it when I was younger. It was one of my favorite storylines. And when I saw the previews for it, it was just, you know, this Phoenix underneath the water. And yeah. I was anticipating it so much. And then I saw the movie and I wanted to, like, I wanted to, like, tear myself in half. I was so disappointed.
Like, you wanted to tear yourself in half?
Yeah. Just so I would never have to see anything like that again.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I wanted to rip out my eyes. It was bad.
But you remember it, though. The feeling, the anger.
I can't
believe this is what they did to the movie I was looking forward to.
Yeah, they butchered it.
As soon as I read the question, one movie jumped to mind for me immediately. And it's a sequel. It's actually a trilogy sequel, same type of deal. Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Okay.
The third Desperado El Mariachi movie. In the 90s, Robert Rodriguez did El Mariachi. Actually, I saw Desperado first, and then I got El Mariachi on, like...
Well, everybody saw Desperado first.
Everyone saw Desperado first, yeah. And then I had to get, like... the VHS copy of El Mariachi special order.
Exactly.
Fell in love with those movies. Watched them over and over and over. And then, we're going to make the third one, and it's going to have Willem Dafoe, and it's a big cast, bigger movie, and the trailers looked amazing. Johnny Depp is going to be a CIA agent. This is going to be the greatest movie ever. I was so excited for it, incredibly excited, and then the movie played out, and to my horror, as it progressed, I was like, this thing just... Thanks.
Well, you know, it was kind of for me the same way the Rum Diary.
That was a little disappointing.
It was like Johnny Depp in another Hunter S. Thompson movie. It's like a match made in heaven.
Right.
And it was not good at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's not good at all. For me personally, I thought it was okay. But I was definitely like, I thought it was less than okay. I can't defend it to anybody. I can't be like, I mean, if you don't like it, then I think you have a good reason for not liking it.
Uh-huh.
I only like it because, you know. It's Depp doing Hunter S. Thompson.
Well, of course.
It's Bruce Robinson who did With Nail and I. It's pronounced With Nail, but it's spelled With Nail.
Okay.
He's a good director. How to Get Ahead in Advertising. He's a pretty good British director who hasn't done many movies. And I was like, oh, this is great. He's doing a Rum Diary. So, yeah, that's another one where I was disappointed, but not as much as Once Upon a Time in Mexico. That broke my heart to the point where I remember seeing commercials for it on television.
Yeah.
After I saw the movie, after I knew the movie sucked, and I saw the commercial on TV,
like,
and I was like,
oh, this
movie
looks so great.
I want to see that movie. How come I didn't see that movie? That one looked fantastic.
Yeah.
But the one that's playing in the theater stinks.
Yep.
Ugh. Yeah. So, those are... That's funny that they're both trilogy-type things. On the weekend that Iron Man 3 delivered.
Yes. Yes, it did.
To bring it all full circle. So that brings us to the end of the show. Again, we don't have a guest here.
No guest.
But I do have a lightning round for you.
I have a lightning round for you, too.
Hi-yo!
We're getting crazy this
lightning
time.
Lightning rounds for each other.
Yep.
That's some
dueling lightning rounds.
Dueling lightning. All right. Well, cool. That was our sound effects machine right there.
Yeah.
Paid a lot of money for that thing.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, hey, you got 10 questions for me. I got 10 for you.
Yep, I think that's the way it works.
All right, let's go back and forth here. We'll trade questions.
Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I'll start. I'll ask the first question.
Okay.
Ready for dueling lightning?
I'm ready. I'm going to duel some lightning.
Number one, who is your favorite Smurf?
Ooh, Dopey. No, that's not. He's not a Smurf. That's a dwarf. Hang on. I guess the only one I can remember, Papa Smurf.
Papa Smurf.
Right. Why not?
Okay. Go.
What is your favorite Steven Seagal movie?
Out for Justice. All right. Number two for you. What is the last book you've read?
Ooh. Do graphic novels count?
Absolutely.
Then The Fountain. I reread that.
Oh, okay.
Recently.
Cool. The graphic novel.
Yeah. The graphic novel came out first.
That's true. It is
because Aronofsky was trying to get it produced and then couldn't. It fell through once.
It's based on his first screenplay.
Exactly.
Well, some differences in there.
Definitely some
good stuff.
100%. But it's really good read.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Let the people know about it.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
Beef or pork?
Pork. Yeah, pork.
The almighty pig.
Number three. What is this question? Oh, how many miles is it from here to the moon? You know, guess it.
I don't know, like 100,000, maybe more. Probably more.
I'll write that down. We will revisit that.
Probably more.
Okay, go ahead.
Where do you consider home?
Oh, you mean like city-wise? Or,
yeah. Home.
Home?
You know, when I say the word home, where do you think of? I mean, you know, city-wise.
I guess now Orlando. I've been here for so long.
All well, right.
If you asked me a little while ago, I've been in New York, but now it's Orlando. It's switched over. Okay, number four. Cold beer or hot soup?
Cold beer.
All right.
So what's your favorite beer?
Favorite beer. I've been drinking a lot of Yingling these days, but I'll have to say my favorite beer right now.
You're only drinking Yingling because you have to, because it's what you can afford.
Well, it's great for its price, for the price range. But favorite beer at this point, Brooklyn One Local. Brooklyn One Local, nice big old bottle of it. Oh, so good. You ready? Number five?
Yep.
Spell precocious.
P-R-E-C-O-C-I-O-U-S.
Very good.
Martini, shaken or stirred?
Shaken. Yeah, shaken.
James Bond style.
James Bond style. Number six, peanut butter and blank.
Nutella.
Oh, okay. All right. Very European.
What is the average wingspan velocity of a coconut-laden swallow?
How did that go? Oh, man. The average of a...
What is the average wingspan velocity of a coconut-laden swallow?
Are these European coconuts, or is it... Or is it swallow?
African or European swallow?
African or European swallow?
I don't know that.
Man, I used to know that whole movie like the back of my hand.
So good.
In case you're wondering, we're talking about Monty Python and Holy Grail.
Of course.
Search for Holy Grail. Number seven, two-part question, Drew.
Okay.
I snuck it in because I'm a jerk like that.
Yes, you are.
All right, close your eyes. All right. You are in your dream house, which is on a body of water. Okay, you're walking through your house. You walk out the back, and you see the water. What is it? Like, how big is it?
It's the ocean.
It's the ocean. And you want to cross this water. You want to cross this ocean. So how do you do so?
Get in a boat.
Okay. That's it?
Yep. All right. What is your favorite old school supermodel? You know, like when you were growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had their favorite.
Those were the days of Cindy Crawford.
Exactly, and Kathy Ireland, and those type of ladies.
Man, I can only think of, Elle McPherson.
Uh-huh.
I guess of those, I'm a Cindy Crawford dude.
All right.
Yeah. Who's still...
still rocking.
Still looking pretty good, Cindy. Still looking pretty good. Number eight. Name three Batman villains. Go.
Joker. Mr. Freeze. The Riddler.
Okay.
Inside or outside?
Oh, inside. Definitely inside. All right, Drew. Number nine. Give me a recipe for a nice little meal. Make it quick.
Ham, cheese, bread, butter both sides. Cook it in a pan for a little bit. Hot ham and cheese sandwich.
Ham and cheese.
Done.
With your culinary depth of knowledge, to throw out hot ham and cheese is insulting to our listeners. Go
awesome. what's your favorite holiday, Chris?
Christmas. Number 10, Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones. You can only finish one.
Breaking Bad.
Okay. That was my number 10.
Number 10, Chris. Where is Waldo?
He's, All right, at the amusement park, he's next to the roller coaster at the front right between the balloon popping stand and the popcorn stand. Now, next to that, there's a guy who has the hat and the cane, but his shirt is all red. He's not wearing glasses. That's not Waldo. You got to look for the hat and the cane to make sure he's got the striped shirt. Make sure it's Waldo. There's a lot of fake Waldos out there. So that's where Waldo is.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, dueling lightning over. Hey, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was.
So that's what it's like.
Yeah, that's what it's like, Chris.
Good times. good times. So people enjoyed it as much as I did. So there you go. That's the end of episode 17. Let's get all the dirty work out there. Twitter, you can follow the show at Crespodiso. Follow me at I am Chris Crespo. Drew.
On Instagram, you can follow me at antihero419.
That's right, Instagram.
Same on Twitter.
Antihero419 for everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
If you want to play him on some game on Xbox.
Yep.
Antihero419.
Yep.
What else? The Instagram, actually, that's a good one.
Yep.
Check out the show Instagram, Cinema Crespo Diso. Facebook, Cinema Crespo Diso. It's all pretty much Cinema Crespo Diso, except for the Twitter, because it didn't fit.
Yep.
So there you go. And Drew sent out a tweet. He sent out his bi-monthly tweet.
Yeah, I don't tweet that much, but I did this time. I figured, you know,
and it was
a gem. I'm gonna be tweeting about stuff. Might as well be movie related.
Might as well get to it.
Maybe every time I see a movie, I'll make a little tweet about it.
How many followers you got? Like 18?
I don't know.
Come on, people. We need to get this guy some followers.
Hang on a second. I think I have more than 18 followers, maybe.
Do you?
Probably not.
Did you break 20?
Actually, I have exactly 18 followers.
18 followers, I knew it because I check. Because I want people to follow Drew. I want Drew to tweet. I want this to happen. So people, antihero419, A-N-T-I-H-E-R-O, 419. Tweet him. He'll tweet you back. He's like a 8-ball, magic 8-ball, but human and with disdain.
Yes, lots of disdain.
So there you go. That was episode 17. I am Chris Crespo. That was Houston Cogburn. The guest was nobody, but who knows? Maybe we'll have a guest next week. Maybe we won't. Check us out on iTunes, chriscrespo.com. I think that's everything, right?
Yep.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do it. What? Cinema. Crespo. Diso. Cinema. Crespo. Diso. Thank you very much.